Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Upgrade your kitchen today with Clearview Cabinetry. We offer a great selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and with cabinet accessories to match your unique style. View our selection of Clearview Cabinetry on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Paul Gallant.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
The most interactive sports radio show in Houston.
Paul, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the devastation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
I was just kind of curious what Paul gets to say. I haven't even asked a question yet.
That, the voice of former Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, talking to me at a Seahawks press conference back during the pandemic. What an interesting day in football. Yesterday, we saw three of the best and longest coaching tenures in recent football history all come to an end. Most recently, we had the report this morning that Bill Belichick, the greatest football coach of all time, 6 Super Bowl titles, 9 Super Bowl appearances in his 24 years in New England, a couple more Super Bowls with the New York Giants as defensive coordinator. He and the Patriots are parting ways. You also saw that the Seahawks politely fired Pete Carroll in a way where it's being said he's moving into an advisory role after 14 years with the Seahawks, an incredible record with Seattle, the closest coach that we've seen in recent history to winning back-to-back Super Bowls, although I suppose you could make the argument that Bill Belichick's Patriots came pretty close. But he's no longer an active coach. And then, of course, you've got former Houston Oilers defensive back coach, 1988 to 1989, former Syracuse linebacker coach, 1977, and, of course, the greatest branch of the Belichick coaching tree, his defensive coordinator with the Browns. Nick Saban has retired. A very eventful day. Now, I guess we quickly talk about the legacies of all of them. As I said before, Belichick's the best coach ever. Yeah, he did benefit largely from his partnership with Tom Brady, but to act like he was not a large reason for the Patriots winning their first 3 Super Bowls is just wrong, and I'm not even going to entertain an argument as to the opposite. Pete Carroll, I had the fortune of covering him in Seattle, and I had access that I realized I'm never going to get again in my professional media career, in that I got to sit in a room with Pete Carroll after every single Seahawks game for basically 25 minutes straight. He was frank, but always polite, respectful, will tell you a couple of things off the air as he left. And the thing about Pete Carroll, in an era where there are so many hardo football coaches, Pete went the entire different direction. Didn't work out his first tenure in the NFL after the Jets, where he coached for a little bit of time with the New England Patriots. Some Patriots players took advantage of it. But he goes to USC. He wasn't even their first choice at USC. And wins 2 national titles, comes so close to winning a 3rd one against Texas. And then he goes to the Seahawks and turns the Seahawks into what they've been, one of the best NFL powers in the NFL the past 20 years, too, if we go back to the Mike Holmgren era. He kept it going. He's one of 3 coaches to win a Super Bowl and a national championship. I think he's one of the best coaches ever in terms of just football as a whole. And he did it by being positive, not by being a dick, which is different. You don't see a lot of coaches do that at least back in the 90s and in the early 2000s, it's starting to trend that way. One of the reasons it's trending that way is because of what Pete Carroll did. And then, of course, you got Saban. What Saban has done, both at LSU and then at Alabama, obviously the time with the Dolphins did not work out so well, is something that I have a whole lot of respect for. It's one of the reasons I kind of liked Alabama over all of these years. And I get it. Like, they're winning all the time. It's easy to not like a team that wins all the time. But as somebody who's just objectively sitting back, this team wins every single year. Didn't we think Alabama was done earlier this year? After they lost to Texas, and they're not looking that impressive against South Florida. And then, oh, look at that. They win the SEC. They're back in the college football playoff. Again, Nick Saban's 72. Pete Carroll, 72. Bill Belichick, I think 71. These guys did it for a long time and did it successfully for a long time. And the thing that I'm wondering this morning is if we'll ever see guys as successful as this trio of coaches coach for as long as these guys did it. Because football coaching, it sucks. It's a miserable job. Just working your way up the totem pole and hopefully being on the right coaching staff that succeeds so that you could potentially get a bigger job with more responsibilities somewhere else. It is thankless, difficult work just to get to a position where you are a head coach. And I wonder how many coaches who do make it all the way to the top and become successful, how many of these guys are going to do it as long as these three did? Because I think that day might be over. I guess you could argue that superstar football coaches still exist. I think they're becoming more few and far between in college football. And in the NFL, I guess I just wonder who the next crop of superstar head coaches is. Really, Sean McVay is the only name that comes to mind that's conventionally thought of as like one of the brightest. And we've heard with Sean McVay that this is a guy who maybe doesn't even want to coach that much longer. So I'm really curious about the future when it comes to coaches that have done it for as long as Belichick, as Saban, as Carroll with the same spot. It's hard to do that to begin with just because you need to succeed. And when you're getting paid a ton of money and you have higher paying options that are alternative gigs in media or some sort of other role, like, why would you want to keep doing it as long as these guys did? So I'm curious about that going forward. Sean Mapes, the producer of the Paul Gallant Show. Off the top of my head, I'm wondering who the next person would be that follows the paths of these three, who, again, like three oldest coaches probably in football right now, and all have had a ridiculous amount of success. That's why they're still coaching in their 70s.
Yeah, I mean, there's no... Yeah, that's a good point right there, is that the reason they get to be in their 70s is because, you know, until 2019... Bill Belichick won the AFC East every year, and he won Super Bowls. Boy, he won six of them in 20-something years.
Like, right.
That's why you get to coach until your 70s. Nick Saban was in the Rose Bowl, a week plus ago?
Yeah.
A week and a half ago.
They almost won that game.
Was in a Rose Bowl with a team no one thought was good in September. Like, that's why you get to do this. Same with Pete Carroll. Like, the success that they had last year after Russell Wilson, when everyone thought that they're going to be
the worst in the league.
Yeah, they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league. They made the playoffs last year with Geno Smith. Like, it just, on his way out in the twilight years, oh, let me just resurrect a historic bust NFL prospects. There you go. All right, see you later. And so it is tough to, it's tough to see who's next up because, these guys won a lot of championships, so there's not a lot of people with a lot of championships up next. And also, yeah, once you get to a certain age and you stop, if you're not as successful as these guys, you stop producing, get fired. So it's going to be like you said, McVay will, we'll see. He constantly flirts with retirement when he's I don't know if he's 40 yet.
With the way that they finished this year, the Rams, I even have to tip my cap to McVay, because I've always thought McVay's a little bit too praised. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I've always just been a tad annoyed. Yeah. He's a genius. But what they have done down the stretch this season is crazy.
I mean, Shanahan's got to get one, but Shanahan could be that. Harbaugh might be the one who we're forgetting sliding in to, like,
Jim Harbaugh.
Yes, Jim Harbaugh.
Not John Harbaugh.
John's like an A minus, but we're talking about the A pluses.
I'm not even sure I'd give John an A minus. I think John's a B plus. Not to say he's done poorly, but
I mean, he's just like a top five coach in the NFL.
That's so totally true. Harbaugh is unique enough to, I guess, also qualify as this sort of superstar coach.
Just to win a college championship and then
get
play
to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but play, like, become, what were they, like, on the 8-yard line with Kaepernick? Like,
yeah.
They had 4 shots at the end zone for another Super Bowl. It's rumored he might come to the NFL again, and we would think he's going to be pretty successful here, too, this time around, because it's, always been that way with Harbaugh. So, I would say those are, like, kind of the only names I got. D'Amico Ryans, maybe?
Ooh.
I mean,
I will say this about Houston coaching going forward, and I suppose maybe there's always a little bit of doubt about how long Kelvin Sampson will be here. It does seem like his son will be the next coach of the Cougs.
But he will be.
At what point do you think Kelvin Sampson decides to walk away? Because he is the closest
elder
coach
statesman type
to one of these guys. Right, elder statesman type. Because D'Amico's in his first year, and, I mean, he's only a couple years older than me. Ime Udoka's pretty young himself. Yeah. He's
second
also
year
his
coach,
first year. Right. It's technically, it's only his second, third full year
it's
as
second,
a head coach.
He had 1 year with the Celtics
right.
and this year. So
I forgot. He didn't even have a game with the Celtics the next season because that happened all in the offseason.
Yeah. So, yeah, these guys, both super young. Joe Espada, very young.
Joe Espada's the one where I'm thinking he might have the shortest tenure of all these three. Pretty easy thing to say right now, but
considering he hasn't coached a game, the other two have like done reclamation projects.
And
but
also, I mean, I'm wondering about not the Astros necessarily this year, but after this
long term
2024 season, like where things go. But
Kirby Smart for a college coach,
because
already having two under his belt. They're probably going to be preseason number one this year.
True.
There's not really a slowdown in sight. I could see that. I could see it's early, but I could see him like running it up.
But there's something else with these three that just left. Belichick, by being so miserly and short, like became a superstar.
Like characters.
Not just because of the winning. It's because of how grumpy he always was. Saban in his own different style of grumpiness, but also seemingly aligned with Belichick. And Pete Carroll, the exact opposite. All of those guys were unique. Jim Harbaugh, who you pointed out earlier, extremely unique as far as like having that like extra quality.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also somebody that clearly rubs people that he works with the wrong way to the point where you have a hard time believing that he will be anywhere 10-plus years. As you're seeing right now with Michigan, seems like he's getting sick and tired of all the BS, probably more from the NCAA than from actual Michigan. So I'm wondering who else could be in the same category as these three. If you got the answer, 713-780-3776 is how you call. It's how you text. You can also join on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, and on Twitter. Also, I think more people are happy about Nick Saban retiring than any coach ever because of all of the possibilities it unlocks and chaos it creates. Who do you think's happiest about Saban? And Houston might not be losing D'Amico Ryans or Ime Udoka anytime soon, but it does look like they'll be losing this coach. To Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, right where you belong.
You're the only one left of the Wayne family. This is where you belong. Welcome home.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
Most interactive sports talk show in Houston. One question for you. Who do you see potentially being the long-tenured superstar coach a la a Belichick, a la a Saban, a la a Pete Carroll, all of whom are no longer working with their employer that they worked with just a week ago? Nick Saban retiring, Belichick and the Patriots parting ways, the Seahawks, and Pete Carroll I'm not really sure what they did. They did fire him. Pete Carroll said, I didn't want this.
Yeah, he said he was like lobbying for his job still in the meeting. And then he was like, then I came to accept it.
I wonder where he will be coaching next year. I would love to see him back in college football. I think actually he would have the energy to do great in college football again. But again, we will see. Someone texted in. You're forgetting Mike Tomlin in this conversation. That's a good one. Tomlin needs to get that next Super Bowl. That's definitely not happening this year. I don't care about them making the playoffs again. Tomlin has somehow, though, been able to make this thing stay afloat in a post-Ben Roethlisberger era with some just mediocre, at best, quarterbacking.
And like, literally never rebuilding. Like,
right.
Never having the one down year to get the quarterback or anything.
And I mean,
he's kept it afloat pretty well.
To make the comparison, that's essentially what Pete Carroll has done in Seattle. They never have tanked. They've had years around 500, but that's pretty much the worst they've been in the entirety of these 14 years. I mean, the last 2 years, winning seasons with Geno Smith, definitely some regression this past season. So I do kind of get why the Seahawks are moving on from him. But yeah.
I mean, his when you just kind of look at Tomlin's overall resume, it is like pretty similar to Pete Carroll's Seattle run, where
pretty much
win a Super Bowl, lose a Super Bowl, never really bad.
He just doesn't have the college aspect. And on top of that, and this is not to take anything away from what Tomlin has done, but Tomlin did take over where Bill Cowher left off, and a lot of the pieces were in place for Tomlin when he took over for Bill Cowher. I think Tomlin's better than Cowher for what it's worth, but let's go to the phone, 713-780-3776. Lonnie has a thought. Lonnie, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Yo.
Can y'all hear me? Can y'all hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, yeah, my bad. I'm in the middle of getting Pedialyte. I'm headed to weigh-ins.
Hell
yeah. I got a fighter fighting.
Pedialyte?
Yeah, I got a fighter fighting this weekend.
Lonnie, did you have too much to drink last night if you're getting a Pedialyte this morning?
Nah, man. Nah, man, I'm a coach. I actually I run a jiu-jitsu program. I got some MMA fighters fighting this weekend, so have to get Pedialyte.
Good luck.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah, just calling just to express how sad I am. I think my grandparents dying and then Nick retiring is probably the saddest days of my life now.
Man.
So,
I'm guessing you're an Alabama fan.
But, nah, man, it's been a great run. Just wanted to say it's crazy. You know, I'm 40 years old. Or actually, I'll be 40 January 25th, and it's crazy to see the landscape of football change like this, man, to be a part of this, you know, to see Belichick and what he did and Saban and Carroll. So
it's been an eventful 24 hours, Lonnie. That's for damn sure, and appreciate your phone call. Good luck with your fight over the weekend, or excuse me, your fighter's fight over the weekend. Pedialyte's my go-to when I'm hungover. It's the best.
It's a good one.
It's the absolute best.
Can we get a sponsorship going? Oh. Pedialyte? You know Pedialyte, Liquid IV.
Paul Gallant here for insert hydration beverage. Did you have too much to drink the night before? Are you trying to do your best and live your best life, but you're sweating all of the booze and or other things you consumed last night? Well, guess what? You have a little bit of this. It's going to make you feel slightly better. That's why my friends here at X are able to deliver you this product every single day. Huh? Huh? I mean, old Alphonse, the sales guy, I don't know what his deal is, but Alphonse's got to pick his game up. Like, we're just giving him free opportunities here. Alphonse. I don't want to go Stephen A. Smith on a colleague here, but like Alphonse, the sales guy, just... You got to pick up your game, dude.
I will say to move away from Alphonse because I'm getting uncomfortable. Okay. Alphonse is a great guy.
Not a great salesman.
Nick Saban really did like him more than any. I mean, maybe Belichick can have like another claim to this. But as far as like coaches who like define the era in which they coached, like Nick Saban, if you think about it. Every single national championship, every single move that gets made for teams that want to win a national championship is either, hey, come here and try to replicate Saban. Like, you hire a Saban guy. You hire Kirby Smart, Steve Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin. Like, you hire a Nick Saban acolyte. Or it is, hey, Hugh Freeze, you beat Nick Saban twice. Come coach at Auburn. Like, it's really, it's those two paths. Jimbo Fisher, you coached under Nick Saban, and then you beat him. Here's, you're now the richest man in College Station.
It's a, it's insane how much of college football, right, the pursuit of Saban has created, and how much Saban has created for the rest of college football with those internships that you just mentioned.
Gus Malzahn, you get to coach at Auburn even though everyone hates you.
Right.
Because you beat them every 3 years.
Right. It is truly fascinating from the, hey, you beat Saban, you get a job. Hey, you worked for Saban, you get a job. Hey, you can't beat Saban, you're done, loser. Like,
yeah,
now he's gone. And for those who don't remember, there are some young people listening right now that probably forget that the last head coach of Alabama was Mike Shula. I remember growing up thinking Alabama was just another program. Like, they weren't that big of a deal.
Yeah, they were awesome in the 70s.
Right.
Like, they were awesome in the 70s.
Right. And now, I mean, look, this is rather on brand for Texas A&M, but I mean, the two biggest celebrations for Aggie football fans probably over the course of the past 2 years have been, one, celebrating Texas losing to Washington, and two, Nick Saban retiring. I mean, I don't know if they're going to have one of their, like, kind of awkward, seemingly like it's, I don't know, like the 1930s march that they do on campus from time to time. But, like, this is a great day for the Aggies. I imagine that Texas A&M is about as thrilled as anyone right now because, I mean, you have Texas and Oklahoma coming into your division in the SEC West. You left the Big 12, and you were thinking to yourself, well, this is going to put us on an echelon above those two programs. Now they're coming in. You need to take the victories where you could get. But, I mean, it's great for Texas. It's great for Oklahoma now coming into the SEC. And just the entire rest of that conference. And I wonder if they're going to be able to maintain what they have. You're already seeing in the age of NIL, like, guys are already leaving. And it's going to be tough to keep this thing together for whoever comes in next. Like, you have a ridiculous job on your hands if you are going to be the next coach at Alabama. You're going to be spending probably more time than any trying to convince everyone to stay. And who's going to want to play for you if you're not Nick Saban? No offense. Nick Saban is better than you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Here's a Sean Mapes guarantee. No matter who they hire, we'll be worse than Nick Saban.
100%.
There would be a fall off.
Sean, it could be Kirby Smart. It would probably be worse than Nick Saban. And I mean, Kirby Smart's probably, at least until today, like, was the second best coach in college football.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to be good for at least another year or two, mm-hmm. just with, like, retaining some Saban guys and, like, the ship kind of running itself. But like we said, like, this year with Jalen Milroe, no one was impressed with him.
Bill O'Brien said he wasn't a quarterback, and he was mad about that leading up to the Rose Bowl, which he was a bad center snap away from potentially sending to another overtime.
No one thought they were any good this year. Everyone was waiting for their second loss that would knock them out of the playoff hunt. Eventually, they came up against Georgia. And they beat Georgia, and then they go to a playoff. Again, this was a down Nick Saban year. And, like, the next guy is going to have to compete with that? Like, the next person that coach is going to have to compete with, be a top four team in a year where no one thinks you're any good. Good luck.
We have a text from the 281. How is Saban a good coach? Are you on crack? I'm not even going to read the rest of your text. What a dumbass. Like, remove yourself. How is Saban a good coach? He has the number one or number two recruiting class every year. He's supposed to win. He's a good recruiter, not coach. Again, Mike Shula was the last coach at Alabama. How did that go for him?
Also, recruiting is a big part of being a college football coach.
Yes. Pete Carroll.
That's lumped in with the the coach job.
Mind-numbingly dumb take, but hey, all takes matter here, right? Another text. I think college has a lot of head coaches. Dabo Swinney, Dan Lanning, Mike Norvell, James Franklin, heck, even Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin is the only character among those guys. Dabo Swinney is somebody who I believe is also a character, but not necessarily for the best of reasons. Lanning, Norvell, Franklin are not on the levels of a Nick Saban. They are not even close.
I mean,
they are new kids on the block, and we'll see, but they are not even close. Lane Kiffin is definitely not either. Lane Kiffin's just funny.
Yeah, the only guy that they named that won 20. Anything is Dabo Swinney.
That's it.
That's part of it. It's like, you have to win. Like, you have, and I mean, now Dan Lanning might be the next Alabama coach. Talking about which bozo is going to take the Alabama coach.
It's going to be Dabo, isn't it?
I think it's going to, I mean, apparently there's conflicting reports about whether or not Dan Lanning is in Tuscaloosa this morning. But I know he's probably going to be the number one candidate, I would assume. Right? And then maybe Dabo. I mean, Dabo, just with the transfer portal stuff, they're going to be like, hey, dude, this is Alabama. You have to use every weapon at your disposal to win games here. Like, you can't just, no, you know what? I'm not going to use the transfer portal. Like, that would not fly at Alabama. Talking about, you know, the craziness that is Alabama, the Clemson's last 2 years would probably be enough to get Dabo Swinney fired if he had the same career just at Alabama.
100%. Like, they have to reevaluate their standards. They're in the same spot now going forward as I've been for a couple of years, but in denial about as a Patriots fan. Like, when you succeed that much, you think everything else sucks. And then 10 years later, you're going to realize, oh, yeah. No, I just saw something historic that is not supposed to ever happen. And that's where Alabama's going to be. Michigan was there. Texas was there. So many college football programs have been there. And it takes you a while to realize, oh, yeah, we had it good. Crap.
Yeah, this is, I mean, at any given time, there are like two or three, maybe even four teams that are, air quotes, supposed to always be good that aren't good. You hire a bad coach, you have some bad breaks, you have a bad recruiting class, and all of a sudden you're Nebraska, you're Texas, you're Miami, who haven't been good in 15 years. Like for a sport where there's a bunch of teams that are always, air quotes, always supposed to be good. Yeah, Michigan had a down stretch up until they hired Harbaugh. Like, everyone has these stretches. Like, everyone, Florida, no offense,
yeah,
but Florida, like, what they've had.
Florida's been a disaster post Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
A disaster. That's not even mincing words. Like, how many coaches? Four? I don't even know anymore. It's been awful.
Everyone gets 3 years and then they get fired.
Yeah, pretty much. He's Sean Mapes. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You want to weigh in on the changes, major changes in the football coaching world? You can. Also, up next, speaking of coaching changes, my God, it is so on brand for this loser-ass organization to be doing what they're doing and what they've already done. You'll find out who we're talking about next when we go around the NFL. It's the Paul Gallant Show. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now with more nougat.
You're not cooking.
Pork chop sandwiches.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush!
Tackling the biggest issues in the NFL.
This just in.
Here's the 10-minute drill with Paul Gallant.
Football time.
We're about to roast the bejesus out of Amy Adams Strunk and the Titans. But before we do that, in the 10-minute drill, this was brought to you by Trill Burgers. I have not had a Trill Burger yet. Sorry, the line does not seem worth it. Pena, he has a thought. Pena, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Paul? So, I got some insider information on why Nick Saban really left Alabama.
Insider information, interesting.
And I'm here to share it with you and Sean. So, the real reason why he left is because Texas is coming. He doesn't want to fight for second or first place no more. He knew he's going to come in third place. Texas is coming. That's why he left. Hook 'em horns, baby.
Good call, Pena. Always a good call with Pena.
I hope you guys could hear me roll my eyes. Stop.
Hey, if Bill Belichick wants to come in and be Texas' D-line coach, let me just be the first to say he's more than welcome to do that. Pete Carroll, I know he's more of a DBs guy, but if he wants to be a defensive analyst or something.
You're acting way too cocky to
Nick Saban. I know is
denigrate two of the greatest coaches in football history, acting like they would be below Steve Sarkisian on a coaching staff. It's ridiculous, completely ridiculous.
Or Steve Sarkisian goes to Alabama.
I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, Sean and I were trolling each other after the show yesterday because I was like, imagine if Steve Sarkisian left Texas to go to Alabama, and then you sent me a picture of Bill Belichick going to Alabama. I don't think Belichick has the patience for college football.
Absolutely. He barely has the patience for NFL football.
I would love to see Pete Carroll to Alabama. I'm not kidding. I think Pete Carroll should go back to a college.
Or, okay.
I think it would be great in the NIL era. I don't think no one treats his players better. No one. Every single person. And they all had sour feelings at the very end. But did you notice they had that essentially like funeral while Pete Carroll's alive last night? Russell Wilson even came back for that. Russell Wilson, Mr. Me himself, came back for that. There is a deep appreciation from anyone who has ever played for Pete Carroll, especially once they leave and play for other people, because they don't realize how great it is to play for that relentlessly and almost annoyingly positive human being. I think it would be great at Alabama.
Really short, Alabama hires DeBoer, the Washington head coach. Pete Carroll, Washington. Doesn't even have to move.
Oh, my God.
Boom. There you go.
And then you'd actually have a legitimate Pac-12 power, except for they're on the Big Ten now, so... The
Oops.
Leaders division or something like that. Okay, we got to touch on this. Bobby Slowik is the offensive coordinator of the Houston Texans. Yesterday, he was asked about interest in him as a head coach now that the NFL coaching carousel has begun. Here's Bobby.
Haven't even thought about it. Like, I won't have much information for you guys. I'm being honest. Like, it's just everything right now is on Cleveland.
Hell yeah. That's exactly what I want to hear from Bobby Slowik. But it's human nature for anyone to at the very least wonder if a head coaching job is in his future. I thought DJ Bien-Aimé had a great piece for ESPN.com about Bobby Slowik and CJ Stroud's relationship, how it started and how it's evolved over the course of this season. I would like to have Bobby Slowik here next year. And with the Texans about to get an offensive rookie of the year, and given the fact that we've seen the Texans before to keep Mike Vrabel from going and getting a head coaching job when he was just a linebacker's coach, promoted him from linebacker coach to defensive coordinator, how hard would it be for the Texans, who clearly have money, they didn't think twice about buying out, firing, paying the entire contracts of both David Culley and Lovie Smith? How hard is it going to be for the Houston Texans to give Bobby Slowik a raise to stay for one, two more years? How hard would that be? I don't know the ins and outs as far as the ability to give coordinators raises, what the contract situation is, but I think this makes a ton of sense for the Texans. Give him a raise. Just give him a raise, keep him around, and we'll see what happens. And it is going to be interesting because Bobby Slowik is one of many coaches that the Tennessee Titans, who are in desperate swipe right mode after firing Mike Vrabel, seemingly without much thought put into what the hell they would do next, especially based off of the press conference they had announcing the firing and that North Korea-esque Titans.com video that they did where Amy Adams Strunk was explaining her decision-making process. Yeah, she really sold a lot of people that she's got, like, the Titans on the right track. They are swiping right so hard. Here are all the requests that they've made. Slowik, Lions defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn, Raiders interim head coach Antonio Pierce, Giants offensive coordinator Mike Kafka, Cowboys defensive coordinator Dan Quinn, Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson, and Ravens defensive coordinator Mike McDonald. They are hiring Mike McDonald. He's a Mike, and he's the most boring sounding of all of those guys. Mike Munchak, Mike Malarkey, Mike McDonald. Lock it down. We were going to hire somebody exciting, and we got stuck with another retread. We are the Tennessee Titans. I'm just Bud Adams' daughter, but I'm just as dumb.
Was that Wade Phillips singing?
No, that's Michael McDonald.
Oh, okay.
This famous musician, Michael McDonald.
It kind of sounds like Wade, if you're to try to make Wade Phillips
sing. I keep
sing.
Forgetting. I don't know what I'm doing. I keep forgetting. Whoops, I shouldn't have fired Mike Vrabel. Okay, so they fired Mike Vrabel. And we're wondering why the Titans fired Mike Vrabel, because there's been no good explanation. It seems like it's something they just came to out of nowhere. Well, per The Athletic's Joe Rexroad, the reason that Mike Vrabel got bleep canned has to do with the Texans, quarterbacked by Case Keenum, beating the Titans while they were wearing their Oilers uniforms. And that would be on brand, because Amy Adams Strunk seems to care more about beating and sticking it to Houston than anything else. From The Athletic, a passage. Strunk was thrilled the Titans pulled off the comeback victory against the Dolphins. But 1 week later, the Titans lost to the Texans in overtime, and the owner was visibly angry about that loss. That's when several members of the Titans staff believed she had made up her mind. She wanted to move on from Vrabel. She made him wear that hat. She consulted with some others in NFL circles about her decision, but ultimately the decision was all hers with no input from general manager Ran Carthon. That is not surprising, because just like her father, who completely effed up the move from Houston to Tennessee because people found out, they stopped going to games, he decided to move up the move date. They had to play in Memphis for a year. They had to play at Vanderbilt Stadium for another year before they finally got a stadium. And they didn't even have a nickname that they changed 2 years later because everyone in Nashville hated the old Oilers name so much. And now they're bringing it back and acting like they never hated it before. Such frauds this family is. Anyway, the other reason makes me even happier. Because if you don't know this already, I hate Titans fans. I hate the ones living in Houston in particular. I think you're losers. But I hate Titans fans because they come after me online whenever I present them with facts. Like, hey, Jake Locker's getting benched for Zach Mettenberger. I'm just reporting the news. Or telling them that Marcus Mariota sucks 3 years before they figured it out on their own. It's fine. They're a dumb fan base that's honestly in denial about Tennessee being dead as a college football program and thought that they could maybe dabble in the NFL. Guess what? They can't, because Amy Adams Strunk is running this thing single-handedly into the ground. But it's not just the Texans that are beating the Titans. My beloved New England Patriots are also sticking it to the Tennessee Titans. Because did you see another reason that apparently the Titans are mad at Mike Vrabel? It's because Mike Vrabel went to Foxborough in October and per Ian Rappaport, seemed like he wanted to leave for the Patriots in the middle of this season.
This was Amy Adams Strunk making the decision that, based on a lot of things, including what happened when he went to New England for the Hall of Fame thing, including not dispelling rumors in-house that he was going to be the Patriots coach. I mean, there was a lot there, and she clearly made the decision that she wanted to move on in the best interest of the organization. And now it is going to be Rand Carthon leading the search for a new leader of men.
Leader of men. What I love the most about this is that Vrabel knew. Oh, yeah, it sucks to work here. I'm working for an idiot. I'm working for a dumb owner who's just as dumb as her father before her. And thinking to himself, after leaving Bob Kraft, playing for Bill Belichick, he knew. He knew this is dumb. And you want to hear what definitely struck a chord with Amy Adams Strunk and probably led her? It was like the first little droplet that led to her canning Mike Vrabel, which is a dumb move by them. Just a totally idiotic move. You think they're going to hire somebody better than Mike Vrabel, who actually can relate to players in 2023? Here is, I know, what had Amy Adams Strunk's blood boiling in addition to Case Keenum sticking it to the Titans.
I want to thank the fans. I haven't been back as much as I should since 2009, but I want to thank the fans. I want to thank the fans that made coming and playing in this stadium unbelievably special. When we traveled, you were there. When we were here, you were there. I can imagine how you screamed and yelled at the night games on third down and when you threw the snow and every memory that comes back right now. So I want to thank you, fans, okay, for the opportunity to stand here today in front of you. Also in front of my teammates, I want to thank them. I want to recognize Logan Makins, Bill Parcells, Dante Scarnecchia, who was one of the toughest assistant coaches I've ever been a part of in 25 years of the National Football League. But I also want you not to take this organization for granted. I've been a lot of places. This is a special place with great leadership, great fans, great direction, great coaching. Enjoy it. It's not like this everywhere. Thank you very much.
That last part, if you're Amy Adams Strunk and you heard that, how can you not take that as a shot against you? Because it is a shot against you. No one respects Amy Adams Strunk. No one respected her father. No one respects the Titans as an organization. No one really respected the Oilers as an organization. They like the uniforms, but there used to be a thought when they were here in Houston that they couldn't succeed in the playoffs because their uniforms were candy-ass colored. It is interesting how things age and change, and we're like, actually, they did look pretty cool. back in the day. But here we are with the Titans desperately flailing and swiping right at anybody that they can potentially hire as a coach, just like what I'm about to do later today after finding out my long-distance girlfriend is dating somebody else, my long-distance girlfriend from the summer. I'm bummed out about that. I am. But guess what? When I go on Tinder swiping for all the ladies out there, that is exactly what the Titans are doing with all these coaches. And guess what? They're going to end up with a boring hire again because it's a loser organization run by a poor. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. First, though, let me tell you about my friends at Pendleton Whiskey. I'm wearing cowboy boots right now. I'm wearing flannel. And you know what I'm going to do when I get home and I do all that swiping? Because I'm sad. I'll feel a little bit happier inside because I'm going to have some cold, crisp, refreshing, not too sweet Pendleton Whiskey. One rock, two fingers. Oh, baby. Did you know that Pendleton Whiskey was founded at the Pendleton Roundup, one of the oldest rodeos in North America? By the way, it's the official whiskey of the PBR Tour, the world's premier bull riding organization, which is coming to town January 26th and 27th. And it captured Pendleton Roundup, the spirit of the American West, just like Pendleton Whiskey. It honors the enduring legacy of that American West and celebrates the cowboy in all of us, made with the finest northern grains, cut with Mount Hood Glacier water. It's Pendleton Whiskey. It's true Western tradition.
Thank you for listening to ESPN 97.5. It means the world.
A whole new world, a dazzling place I never knew.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's your host, former Shorecrest Preparatory All-District Safety, Paul Gallant.
Had a couple people texting in the commercial break. Paul, you're out of control right now, possibly. Was that a little bit of TMI towards the end of that rant? Hey, whatever. Listen, I am as honest as they come, and I definitely open the kimono and expose myself more than any other show at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Honestly, I should charge money for it. Sean Mapes is shaking his head. Whatever.
No, it's just the opening your kimono and exposing yourself.
Yeah, I'm just swinging it around.
You could just say opening the kimono. Fill in the blanks. But
yeah, but it's more fun when you make everyone uncomfortable. Yeah. This is my Michael Scott moment right here. So, the Houston Rockets played a game last night. I watched it with a couple of my buddies at Chili's. Chili's is the superior American chain of restaurants. A couple Presidentes, chicken crispers, some wings, some chips. And the Rockets had a pretty fun game last night against the Chicago Bulls. So we're going to start doing this, occasionally checking in on the Houston Rockets when I think there's something worth discussing. And we're going to do it with a theme song to a television show that J.J. Watt was repping yesterday on the Pat McAfee Show. For those who remember it, way back in the 1990s on Nickelodeon, there used to be a little television show called Rocket Power. Yeah.
We are riders on a mission, action, kids in play position.
Rocket power! See, this music's on in the background. There's a couple of characters. One's named Twister, Otto, Squid.
We are riders.
Good show. Great theme song.
Great things.
Rocket power.
Really got kids into extreme sports.
It did. Which is, probably sure. Resulted in a lot of broken bones.
I was going to say, so many broken bones.
Right. So, let's take a look at what happened in last night's Rockets game. Alperen Şengün had 0 points at halftime. Zero. But in the second half, he had a lot. He went off. And this play that Şengün pulled off last night, he looked like he was Dirk Nowitzki out there.
Jab step.
Crossover, back down, spin, whirl, fade away.
Ain't no way!
It's a good call by Ryan Hollins there. With the
appropriate, too. Very appropriate. I was having the same thoughts sitting on my couch.
At Chili's, my friends, Brad, Kyle, and me, got up, made so much noise, and everyone was like, what's going on? This is a family restaurant.
Do they have their mortgage on this game?
I know, right? Like, these degenerates gamble on the game. But Şengün played so well, and he's clearly the best player on the Rockets. And I'm not a subscriber that every single time at the end of a game, a team needs to give the ball to its best player. I.e., take a look at what Chicago did at the end of regulation last night, where they gave the ball to DeMar DeRozan, who just dribbled out the shot clock and then took a mediocre fadeaway look at the buzzer, and he missed it.
That's just DeMar DeRozan. He makes them, he misses them.
And that's also, Sean, just basketball, where there's a lot of possessions that end up like that.
Yeah, especially with the game tied. We don't need to try to run a play, try all this passing, and then turn the ball over. Like, let's just, if we miss, it's overtime. If we make it, we win.
All that said, Sean, Alperen Şengün, in the second half of last night's game and in overtime, he scored all 25 of his points. 25. He was on fire. And after that jumper, you would think, oh, the Rockets just got to keep feeding him and let him win the game. He's clearly just cooking. But then their very next possession, Şengün gets trapped outside of the key, and he had to give it up. There's like 4 or 5 seconds left on the shot clock. He had nothing to do with the ball. So he passes it to a wide-open Cam Whitmore, who's outside the three-point line, who for whatever reason dribbles to his right and inside the three-point line and takes the longest two possible.
Old-school basketball, baby.
Right. Now, he's a rookie, so yeah. Okay, maybe you look the other way on that. But then the very next possession, Jalen Green decides, I'm the best player on the team, and goes 1-on-4, dribbling through the lane against Zach LaVine at the rim, ultimately. And Zach LaVine's bigger than him. So guess what? He misses the layup. And all it took was that brief little moment for the Bulls to take the game, take the lead, take all the momentum.
Yeah, the Bulls just, basically after each one of these misses, just bomb a three.
Right, and they would make it. The worst would have been if Alex Caruso also made the wide open three that he took. Like, that's the thing. The Rockets all of a sudden gave up some wide open looks. Yeah. So, look, they're a young team. This is not me having a meltdown over what happened. I just hope this is a learning experience for them going forward, that you got to give it to Şengün when he's hot. He is the best player on your team, and if that creates shots for other guys, great. It did create one for Cam Whitmore there. He took a bad one, and then Jalen Green did Jalen Green stuff. And, I mean, we're starting to run out of time with Jalen Green. Last night was one of those moments where just that one specific moment pissed me off with Green. It actually made me angry. It's one moment. I'm not talking about the totality of the game. Like, he was a disaster the whole game, but he was 8 of 19. I'm just looking at that moment. It was Şengün's time right there, and Jalen Green took it away from him. So just something to keep in mind going forward. I hope the Rockets learn from it. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Some bad news for the Houston Texans in their playoff matchup on Saturday, and more rat poison for them to avoid. Stick around.
You found ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I can feel it.
I can feel it down in my plums. They're getting a nice bluish hue.